fallout from The Desert Storm by Blue Sunshine, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of George Lucas. Chapter 1. Master Windu had personally escorted, marched, Master Nasadeh and Padawan Kenobi to the Halls of Healing the moment they returned to the temple, releasing them into the tender, furious care of the healers. Obi-Wan, who had slept in fits and starts their entire trip home, was the subject of much empathy from the healers and vicious lectures offered to his master. He was absolutely forbidden from any psychic activity beyond the mundane, to include deep meditation and any force techniques practice, so his natural shields could be allowed to heal without stress. This restriction was expressed to him and his master several times, with very explicit promises of punishment should they even think about straying from the healer's instructions. "I'm not actually trying to kill my Padawan," Ben insisted. No one entirely believed him, save Obi-Wan, but Obi-Wan was napping at the time and therefore unable to defend his master's honor. Ben, on the other hand, was put on light duty restrictions and forbidden from any activity that required more exertion than walking. He also had a list of instructions as long as his arm about all the various ways in which he was to avoid tests of the fragile weave holding his skin and muscles together. Neither of them was a pretty sight as they shuffled uncomfortably back to their quarters, and neither of them were particularly pleasant to engage on the way. One poor knight found himself the subject of eerily similar expressions of pinched impatience and equally irritated responses when he inquired as to the details and success of their mission. One poor Padawan made the mistake of offering sympathies for their clearly rough assignment and received in return the cold rebuff of two individuals who refused to admit to experiencing any difficulties whatsoever. "I call dibs on the blanket," Obi-Wan mutters as they approach their quarters.
"Pardon?"
Ben shoots him a glance that is harsher than he realizes. Obi-Wan returns it mulishly.
"I call dibs on the blanket,"
Obi-Wan repeats, slightly louder and clearer.
"Oh, really?"
Ben drawls.
"Why is that?"
"Because I earned it," Obi-Wan huffs.
"I was imprisoned," Ben points out. "I had to run through the jungle all night while you got to sleep,"
Obi-Wan retorts.
"I was knocked unconscious via blunt force trauma." "You wrecked my shields,"
Obi-Wan pulls out the low blows.
"I assured that the Jedi didn't come in to slaughter the Kalish,"
Ben challenges his Padawan's protest.
"I challenged the Kagan of Kali to fight me."
"You what?"
Ben explains, turning a sharp frown on his Padawan, whose eyes widen as if recalculating what he has just admitted to.
"To stop them from attacking Kursk and fighting the Jedi,"
Obi-Wan explains hurriedly, nervously fiddling with the hem of his shirt.
"You fought Chimayen Jai Shilal?"
Ben utters in disbelief.
"Well, no,"
Obi-Wan admits. "He wouldn't fight me." His master sighs in relief and lays a tired hand on his Padawan's shoulder. He glances back down out of the corner of his eye.
"Then that doesn't count," he mutters.
Obi-Wan scowls back up at him.
"I was nearly cut in half."
"Yes,"
Obi-Wan acknowledges, a cool look in his blue-green eyes.
"And I was nearly made masterless."
Ben winces, recalculating his claim.
"Yes, well, I suppose a Jedi Master should show grace and allow his Padawan their comforts in times of distress."
"I am not in distress,"
Obi-Wan protests, flushing. Ben lifts a brow and his Padawan scowls, flushing a deeper red.
"Thank you, Master, for being so gracious and understanding. It's a wonder all the temple isn't in awe of your example."
Ben's lips actually part at that cuttingly dry remark, and then he finds himself laughing, which turns into gasping and keening at the pain that causes. His Padawan is an immediate flash of concern in the Force, and helps him hobble the rest of the way to their quarters. Since Obi-Wan is banned from delving into the Force for the sake of his own unprotected psyche, his training reverts solely into the physical, and he's actually grateful to fall down exhausted each night, even if he'll wake stiff-muscled and aching. If he's tired enough, he doesn't dream, and he does not want to dream. The galaxy, however, rarely gave one what one wanted. Click, 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 clack. Click, 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 clack. their blade arms rattle when they shift, and a dozen pairs of multifaceted eyes are all watching him, towering above him from across the table. Their eyes are all red and their bodies are all black. Click, 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 clack. Obi-Wan's hands are slick and coated with blood, where they hold the bowl in front of him. The bowl is empty. Click, 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 clack. The floor is littered with bodies, some long-limbed and broken, some red-brown-skinned and spilling out their organs, severed into uneven pieces. Click, 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 clack. The walls are high and polished, as the table is, and he recognizes this place. The table is in the creche. Obi-Wan panics, but he can't let go of the bowl. Something is on the table, and small hands wave from the moving... The bodies on the floor are wearing robes, and they are small, so small. Click, 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 clack. Obi-Wan runs. The bowl disappears. The blood on his hands does not. The bodies are everywhere. They are in the halls and in the gardens, and they are so small, and they have been cut down. The halls reek of plasma and scorched flesh, and Obi-Wan runs and runs until he finds himself in the council chamber. A circle of chairs he has only seen once. There is a young Padawan sprawled across the tile, a saber hilt in his hand and a black hole burned through his back. And behind the chairs are the shadows of those he was protecting, still and cold as he is. In the center of the room,
Master?
Obi-Wan calls out. The sound should echo. It doesn't. His master turns around, eyes red-rimmed with tears, and something soft in his gaze crumples at the sight of Obi-Wan.
Oh, Padawan, he sighs. You should not be here.
They wake up. Obi-Wan jolts into waking and turns, tangled in the black, gray-white blanket, and looks to his master's bed. His master's eyes are open, but he's staring up at the ceiling, taking slow, measured breaths. His hands are clenched into his sheets. The quiet is full of expectation, a dozen questions on the tip of Obi-Wan's tongue. He doesn't ask them. Obi-Wan studies the dim outline of his master's profile. His cinnamon hair, lighter and more golden than Obi-Wan's, washed nearly blue in the dark. His trim beard, the almost straight line of a nose that had probably been broken more than once. So much of his master was a mystery, and so much of him was so familiar. Tension hums in the Force, a brittle waiting, and his master continues to stare up at the ceiling. Obi-Wan bites his lip and slips off his bed, pads the 2 steps it takes to reach his master's, and throws the blanket over the older man. Ben startles, mostly because the blanket lands over his face and he jerks his hands up to yank it off on instinct. Obi-Wan flops onto the mattress and scoots his way back under the edge of the blanket, resting his back against his master's side and shoving his master's arm up and out of the way. He hears his master sigh softly, and then a hand rests over his hair. Neither of them manage sleep again that night, but the comfort feels more restful, anyhow. Obi-Wan can feel the tingle of warning that is not quite pain with every precisely placed step he takes, eyes trained on the floor. His muscles and bones protest quietly, aching from a 10-day of strenuous, unrelenting exercise and a lack of restful sleep. The burn in his muscles is almost pleasant, and all Obi-Wan wants is to fall into oblivion, into deep dark, where there are no nightmares, and as such, he's looking forward to another thoroughly exhausting training session. Obi-Wan, his master says softly, it's your rest day. Obi-Wan blinks, surprised, his feet having been following a familiar track through the corridors all of their own accord, and promptly bursts into tears. The cracking sound his voice makes bounces off the walls as he crumples inward, hands coming up to cover his face, tears running hotly down his cheeks. His master quietly puts supporting hands on his shoulders, and two aghast Padawans turn and dart off in the opposite direction.
Oh, Padawan, Ben sighs. And it is so similar to their nightmare that Obi-Wan shudders, racked by another sob. Without much, if any, compunction, this prompts his master to scoop him up completely and carry him like a youngling back to their quarters. Obi-Wan would protest, but he's too embarrassed to take his hands away from his face and too overwhelmed to do more than choke back more loud sobs.
This counts as strenuous activity,
Obi-Wan blubbers when he can manage, and buries his face against his master's shoulder. I won't tell if you won't, Obi-Wan, Ben mutters, practically breathing the words into the boy's hair. Shmi no longer startles when they come in the door, even at odd hours, but she does pause when she watches him carry Obi-Wan into the living area and settle him down on the low, padded gray couch that eventually took residence under their plant-infested window. Ben fetches the black-to-white blanket from their bedroom and bundles the boy up. Shmi, familiar with quiet, comforting rituals, has already started heating water for tea by the time he has Obi-Wan properly sequestered. Obi-Wan, safe behind the door of their quarters, finally stops trying to force everything back down and gives in to the shaking rattling his frame, and lets his tears soak into his knees, curled tightly in on himself. Tea is ready by the time he emerges. Ben and Shmi settle on either side of Obi-Wan, already nursing their second cups and providing quiet reassurance. Ben has a momentary regret for the fact that Shmi has grown comfortable enough with the temple to leave Anakin in the creche from time to time. A lap full of considerate three-year-old Ben knew could be remarkably soothing. He himself remembers balancing Luke on his knees, letting himself let go of all the weight of his problems, just for the focus of those desert sky-blue eyes looking into his own. Younglings, also, were far easier to hug. Obi-Wan sips his tea and stares dully at the opposite wall, eyes drawn to the play of light on the uncertain shade of pale that made up the tiles in the kitchenette. He can't quite bring himself to speak, and they don't press. When he finally seems to be coming back to himself, it's late, and Ben leaves Obi-Wan in Shmi's practiced care, as she soothes over the hurts of his soul with stories that crept into the heart and made a home there, no matter how foreign their origin. Ben makes his way to the nearest dining hall, hoping they have something Obi-Wan particularly favors on selection tonight. He's barely made it to the serving line to ask a droid to prepare three covered trays when he is ambushed from both sides by Knight Gallia and Master Tal. Ladies, Ben grumbles, far more concerned with his Padawan than with their hostility at the moment, and yet trapped between equally immovable Jedi. In light of your injuries, and the relief felt at knowing your death was a falsehood, perhaps I awarded too much gratuity to your character, Master Nasadeh, Arigania says darkly. Clearly, it was undeserved. Oh? Ben asks icily, his own frustration boiling up at suffering more baseless insults while his Padawan needed him. He has not ever truly forgotten what it felt like to be that young and feel so wrong and out of place, constantly told his emotions were a burden no one needed, constantly afraid that he would be cast aside for the slightest outburst. That fear had followed him from creche to council chamber, and ruined so much of his life and so much of Anakin's. If he hadn't always hesitated to speak, to reach out, would Anakin have come to him instead? For someone who claims to care for their Padawan, you have severely maltreated that child, Tal joins in, the towering Nurian master resting one hand on her hip. Maltreated? Ben snaps. You had him in tears today, Tal adds, anger coloring her voice. My Padawan was told he had all but an emotional collapse in the hallway, and this even after the healers gave you explicit instructions not to cause him any undue stress. For force's sake, was destroying his shield not enough for you? Ben actually gapes at the two women, who are clearly implying that he has pushed Obi-Wan past the breaking point, that his Padawan has finally collapsed under the assault of his reportedly cruel master.
that he has at the very least emotionally abused his Padawan to the point of real harm.
You do not deserve that, boy, Gallia adds with disgust, and Ben,
there is always that moment where anger reaches clarity. It is no less dangerous than a fogged rage, and often no more logical, but in the space of it, one can act far more deliberately.
If you wish to challenge me, then challenge me, Ben says clearly.
And several badly eavesdropping knights and masters glance their way. In fact, he raises his voice, just enough to carry to make sure he is heard. Anyone who can best me can take charge of Obi-Wan's training for a month, for each victory. Tal and Gallia don't even hesitate to take a breath. I accept, they echo. Shmi frowns down at the two teenlings who have been indecorously pounding on the door chime to the Nasadeh Kenobi Skywalker residence, and they quiver with singing nerves and yet still crowd close, eager to dash past her to find their friend yet too well-mannered to actually do so.
We really, really need to see him,
Padawan Bantiran says, silver eyes wide. Please, ma'am, Quillen Voss adds quietly, attempting to appear meek and innocent. To Shmi, the boy does so very, very poorly. She has practiced meekness all her life, has survived on the illusion of it, as have many slaves before her, who spoke of freedom in the dark of night and whispered hope into each other's eyes, and held revolution ever in their hearts. Meekness is a mask and not one he wears well.
Why are you guys here?
Obi-Wan asks, padding up to the door behind Shmi. Having heard their voices, he glances back at him in concern. His voice is scratchy, eyes red-rimmed, and the blanket is still drawn around him, as if it could buffer him from the world. He looks so very young.
Obi!
Bant cries, gills frilled in either excitement or distress, both maybe.
Obi-Wan, your master has issued a challenge.
The red-haired boy stares at her, uncomprehending.
What?
Everyone heard that Nasadeh...
Master Nasadeh,
Bant corrects.
Made you cry, and so Master Tal and Knight Gallia confronted him about how bad he treats you, so he issued a challenge,
Quillen relays with relish. Obi-Wan pales and then flushes, face turning splotchy, and his eyes start to water again, making him blink furiously. Bat smacks Quinlan's arm for his lack of tact.
What challenge? He asks,
voice very low to hide how very close he is to tears again. Bat looks apologetic.
Anyone who beats him can take charge of your training for an entire month, she says, then brightens a little. Master Tal will treat you much better, I promise.
Obi-Wan blinks at her, mouth thinning out.
They're taking it before the council now, Quinlan adds. It'll be on the temple net officially by tomorrow morning once they establish formal rules.
Shmi frowns at this, brows pinched over dark brown eyes.
So he's not coming back with dinner? She asks pointedly.
Bant's gills flash red and Quinlan offers an apologetic shrug.
No?
It's all right, Obi-Wan sighs. I'm not hungry anyways.
Shmi turns her frown on him, her gaze sharp.
You will be eating dinner, she says firmly.
And Obi-Wan's gaze jerks up. He shuffles a little.
I'd rather not go out, he whispers.
Shmi's gaze softens.
You do not have to. Quinlan, Bant, would you be so kind as to fetch Obi-Wan and I some dinner? You're welcome to join us.
Both of them offer wide, childish grins at that and nod, dashing off. Obi-Wan's gaze trails after them.
Tal isn't going to beat my master, he says softly.
Do you wish her to?
Shmi asks, stepping back so the door will close, her hand lifting to settle between his shoulder blades. He leans into the point of contact. He leans into the point of contact. The way a flower leans towards the sun. His lips quirk a little.
Of course not, he huffs.